Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of In the Barn. I'm Robin.
And I'm Kelsey. And in today's episode, we're going to look at two products commonly advertised as must-haves for any good eventer or show jumper. Flare strips and Ice Vibe boots. Do flare strips really help your horse breathe better while cruising around a jump course? And are Ice Vibe boots the best option you can find for post-cross-country recovery? Stick around to find out.
I don't know why, but I am so nervous and it just feels weird because today we are flipping the script a little bit on you guys. And instead of Kelsey going first, I am going first for once. And that is very uncomforting. Discomforting.
Uncomfortable? Unfortunate?
Uncomfortable. That's the word I was looking for. I was looking for the word uncomfortable.
I think this is a good episode to do that this time of year because I feel like the number of people promoting both of these products has greatly increased now that we're seeing cross-country competitions, right? Everyone's back on course getting ready for eventing or prepping for Rolex.
Oh, yeah.
There have been so many advertisements, sponsored posts for flare strips recently popping up, as well as I swear everybody on Facebook is asking if their horse needs Ice Vibe boots. Like, I've seen so many posts about people asking if these are a good investment. So I think it's a really good time to talk about these products.
Well, yeah, because you got all the 5 stars coming up. So like everyone's sponsors are just going to be pushing these products just that extra little bit more. And you know, as soon as everyone sees the top riders using them, that immediately everyone else is like, well, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. And I've definitely fallen victim to that. And they've gotten me quite a few times. Also, this is just a quick detour before we get into the topic today. Ever since we talked about GutX in that one episode, I have never once gotten an ad for them on Facebook before. Now, nonstop, I get constant GutX ads and I'm like, get off my feed.
I was getting a lot immediately after that episode, plus some like really random coupons in my email from them, like coupons through PayPal, which I thought was really weird. Like,
ooh, that sounds like a scam.
Right? Doesn't that sound really weird? How's my PayPal account know that I visited this website? Like, that's weird.
All I know is after this episode, I'm going to have dozens of ads for flare strips in Ice Vibe boots now.
Probably. I haven't gotten any Ice Vibe boot ads yet, but I suspect that they're not far away.
Probably not. But on that note, the product that I dove into today that I was doing research on is the flare nasal strips that we see every 5-star eventer running around cross country with. And I definitely went into my research looking at this product very skeptical. I've always kind of seen it as another gimmick type product, one that kind of just offers a placebo effect to riders and really doesn't do much, if that makes sense.
I mean, it seems almost impossible for them to do something, right? Like, I'm skeptical for sure.
Right. I mean, it makes sense to be skeptical of a product like this. But honestly, after reading 8 or so different research studies that specifically look at how nasal strips affect horses, I'm kind of happy to say I've changed my mind on them. I just think that perhaps they're not, advertising says they can be used at any discipline, at any level, and I don't necessarily think that is true or perhaps the best or most efficient way to use nasal strips.
Okay, interesting.
Which brings us to, what do the flare nasal strips even do? What is the point from them? And this comes directly off of their website, is that when horses work hard during exercise, the unsupported tissues overlying the nasal passages collapse, making it harder to breathe. Flare equine nasal strips are drug-free, gently support the horse's nasal passages, and are clinically proven to make breathing easier. They are developed by veterinarians, and the adhesive and shape memory supports provide gentle support to the nasal passages to improve airflow to the lungs, reduce fatigue, conserve energy, quicken recovery, and reduce lung bleeding.
Sounds fantastic.
It is. It does sound good, doesn't it? Sounds real good if that's what it does. But basically, what the flare strips do is the supports within the nasal strips themselves help keep the soft tissue of the nasal passageway tented over the nasal passageway instead of creating a divot or becoming concave, when the horse is breathing hard, or from collapsing, I guess, when the horse is going through rigorous exercise.
Does it collapse, or is the nostril just like so expanded that the rest of the passage looks collapsed?
No, it definitely collapses, or at least creates a divot in that soft tissue when the horse is going through really rigorous exercise and is breathing heavily.
Okay.
But let's real quick cover how horses breathe and why flare strips have been able to take off. And I know we've kind of covered this a little bit in the past, but just bear with me here as we review the breathing that a horse does. But essentially, horses breathe and pretty much only breathe through their noses. They're not mouth breathers. And for their respiratory system to work and operate at full capacity, they must be able to fully seal their mouths. Now, obviously, with bits being used, this doesn't necessarily allow that to happen. And due to horses only breathing through their nasal passages, there is a lot of strain put on those passages when they're enduring intense exercise. And if a horse can't breathe to full efficiency, much like you or I, this results in the horses becoming fatigued sooner, as well as causes a change in their stride and their performances. Nasal passages are responsible for about 42% of the total respiratory system flow resistance at rest. And then once a horse starts exercising, that respiratory resistance is doubled. And on inspiration, which is inhalation, the nasal passages are responsible for over 50% of the respiratory resistance when horses are going through rigorous exercise. And so ideally, the flare strips help reduce that respiratory resistance, and that with the reduction of that resistance, the horses can breathe easier, they can get more oxygen to their muscles, and as well as if they can take a bit deeper breath, they can have a longer stride.
Okay.
And with that, I am so excited to finally say that we have done it. We found a company that not only authentically somewhat presents their research, but has research behind their product. I mean, they like on their website, they say, you know, backed by research, and you say, sure, because we've all heard it before. We've seen the same thing before over and over again where they say they have research, but where is that research ever actually located? But no, flare strips provide dozens of articles underneath the reference tabs that talk about flare strips, kind of like the goal of what flare strips are doing. But then they also have a link to a PowerPoint that goes through all the different studies that have looked at how nasal strips affect horses. And specifically, they have studies that look at flare strips interacting with horses, which, when does that happen? That is really freaking cool.
Yeah, that doesn't happen often.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't happen nearly as frequently as it should. But flare, they have about 8 different studies they reference that look at horses using nasal strips while they are being exercised. And so obviously I'm not going to break down all 8 different studies for us, because then we'd be here all freaking day, but I am going to break down a few of them for us. That way we can understand when flare strips will have the most or greatest impact and who would benefit from them the most. However, with that being said, there was one study I really wanted to read that I just could not get access to that was called The Effects of Commercially Available Nasal Strips on Airway Resistance in Exercising Horses. It was published in 2002, and their goal was basically to determine the effects of commercially available nasal strips on the airway mechanics in exercising horses, where the nasal strips tent the skin over the horse's nasal valve and dilate that section of the nasal passageway, where they hypothesized that through reducing this resistance of the horse's airway, this can reduce the energy it takes for the horses to breathe. And I so badly wanted to read this study because it was one of the only ones that doesn't specifically look at EIPH, which is exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging in horses, which is them bleeding in their lungs when they're exercised to such an intense degree.
Interesting. So it is trying to stop lung bleeding then.
It is. It totally is. And I would say that's probably the biggest benefit or the biggest goal that nasal strips are aiming for, is to reduce that exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging.
Interesting.
It is. I think it's super cool. And even though I couldn't get access to the one study that I really wanted to that looked at something other than bleeding in the lungs, the first study we're going to dig into is called The Effects of External Nasal Support on Pulmonary Gas Exchange and EIPH in the Horse. And EIPH is exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging. I'm probably going to say that like 20 more times. Now, the majority of the studies done evaluating nasal strips, like I said before, for horses are really focused on how and if they reduce exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging. And for the most part, they come to the same conclusion. And I'm specifically going to look at this study first that also examined pulmonary gas exchange, because it's relevant to the second study I talk about and that we'll dive into. So just keep that in mind.
Okay.
But their goal for this study was to determine the effects of an external nasal strip on the pulmonary gas exchange and the EIPH response to high-speed treadmill running with horses, specifically looking at if the application of the nasal strip substantially reduces dynamic airway compression and therefore reduces inspiratory resistance, which is the resistance the respiratory system exudes when the horse is inhaling. What they did was they took 6 thoroughbreds and 1 quarter horse, all geldings, who were then exercised on a high-speed treadmill twice a week just to get them used to the treadmill and the procedure they would go through when they went through the testing. When they were on the treadmill, the exercise protocol consisted of 800 meters at 3 meters per second, which is about 180 meters per minute, so essentially a light trot, followed by an abrupt increase to 7 meters per second, which comes to about 420 meters per minute. And if you're trying to get an idea of kind of what pace that is, that's essentially a horse going training level speed around a cross-country course. The treadmill speed increased 1 meter per second each minute after that until reaching the limit of tolerance, with the final speed averaging 12 meters per second, which is about 720 meters per minute. So to wrap your mind around that, an advanced horse is going to travel about 570 meters per minute on cross country.
They used to travel 600 meters per minute. That used to be the standard, but they've since slowed it down because the courses have become more technical. I'm really sorry. I listened to a really long podcast about it the other day.
Well, either way, both of those are significantly slower than 720 meters per minute, which is the max speed that these horses would go for 60 seconds before they would be slowly decreased back down.
That just sounds painfully fast.
One of the other studies that I looked at, they settled on, and we'll go into it, they settled on 14 meters per second because it induced
bleeding.
Exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging every single time consistently. Ugh. So that's why they put them at that fast of a speed.
Oh, it just sounds so fast and like so just hard on the body.
Luckily, these horses were only going at it for 60 seconds, but I'm guessing in this instance, it was enough to induce that. That way they could see what kind of effect the nasal strips have. Each horse completed 2 runs on the treadmill, one with the nasal strip and one without. And there was a period of 10 to 14 days between runs. So they weren't happening back to back. The horses were hooked up to all sorts of things. They had 2 catheters, which are just needles, placed in their right jugular vein. And then they had 1 18-gauge 2-inch catheter in a previously elevated left carotid artery. They took measurements for pressure in the right ventricle, heart rate, blood temperature, systemic arterial pressure, as well as the horses wore an open flow air mask to track their oxygen consumption and their CO2 production, which is carbon dioxide. What they found at the end of this study was that when the horses were at rest, as well as the initial stage of trotting or incremental increase of speed, there was no significant differences between no nasal or nasal strip for oxygen consumption or carbon dioxide production. Peak heart rate wasn't significantly different either between nasal strip or no nasal strip. However, when the horses hit their highest running speeds, oxygen consumption was significantly reduced when using a nasal strip. So the average oxygen consumption with the nasal strip was about 56.4 liters per minute, which is the liters of air that horse is intaking per minute, versus without a nasal strip, the oxygen consumption was around 59.9 liters per minute, and carbon dioxide production was significantly reduced in the final exercise stages with the use of a nasal strip. And this means that the horses were breathing more efficiently. There was a difference. Consistently, there was a difference that they were having to intake less oxygen.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like night and day difference, but any...
But it is a difference.
Any difference is probably a significant amount.
Right. I'm going to take that. I'm happy to see it. Like, the fact that they were able to have a difference to report, cool. For a product I didn't think would do anything, dude, dope. I'm super excited for you.
The fact that you can measure the amount of air that a horse is breathing in and like the amount of CO2 they're producing out, that is sort of also mind-blowing that like we have equipment that can do that.
Dude, they have like, looking at them, the horses are like wearing a bubble around their nose. They look super funky, but adorable at the same time.
I believe it, but it's just like a cool concept that we can measure those sort of things.
They also noticed between the horses that exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging was reduced in 5 of the 7 horses when using nasal strips, with an average of 32.5% mean reduction of EIPH. And this corresponded to a fall in red blood cell count within the, for all you that get super upset that we mispronounce these words, I'm so sorry. I did look it up, and I'm going to tell you right now, the video, no help. Did not pronounce it any better than I'm going to do. Broncholavialar. Broccoli
VR.
I don't think so.
It's broccoli VR.
I don't think that's it. Let me try this again. Okay. And that corresponds with a fall in the red blood cell count within the bronchovular lavage fluid, which is the fluid within the lower respiratory system. With the use of the nasal strips, the red blood cell count within that fluid dropped between 22 to 79% when the nasal strips were used. So that's a good bit of reduction in reducing that pulmonary hemorrhaging. Increased resistance and the associated pressure profile within airways and the thorax contribute to exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging. So reducing this resistance appears to be a really good thing, and that's also reflected within the differences we saw between horses using the nasal strips and those not using the nasal strips. All of this goes to demonstrate that nasal strips do have an effect and reduce pulmonary gas exchange and exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging during high-speed running in horses. Now, I know flare strips say that you can use their product at any level, and that's certainly true, but kind of looking at the study, it might not really be necessary until you reach a higher level or intend to do some fast-paced galloping.
So, yeah, that your training level horse and prelim horse probably don't need it. You'd probably need to be at least going advanced and maybe even a racehorse.
Right. We'll get into it a little bit more when I get to my conclusion. But yeah, that's kind of what I was taking away from this, is that when the horses were going a little bit of a slower speed, like what we would typically be using that training level cross country. Mm-hmm. And I would be super curious as to what a horse at training level speed looks like with and without a nasal strip over a prolonged period of more than just 60 seconds,
sure.
Which is what these horses were running at before their speed was increased. Because I don't know about you, but most of my cross country courses are longer than a minute.
It's going well, it's longer than a minute.
Yeah, one can hope it lasts longer than jump one.
Yeah, but you know what? We've all been there, so.
But as we saw here, the biggest differences for the nasal strips, and that the nasal strips do cause a difference, occurred at very high and strenuous speeds for the horses. Now we get into the fun study, and I'm really happy I stumbled upon this one because I noticed flare strips themselves, they also talk about this study, not just like them being upset about it, but they talk about how other authors have reached out and asked for more information and haven't gotten responses back about it.
Okay.
To get into the fun study, the title is Nasal Strips Do Not Affect Pulmonary Gas Exchange, Anaerobic Metabolism, or EIPH in Exercising Thoroughbreds. Their goal was to see whether nasal strip application would improve the exercising-induced arterial hypoxemia and hypercapnia, diminish anaerobic metabolism, and modify the incidence of exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging in horses. What they did was they took 7 thoroughbreds ranging from 2.5 to 5 years old. All were exercised 3 days a week on a high-speed treadmill. They would begin at 2 meters per second for 60 seconds, which is just trotting for a minute. And then they would bump it up 1 meter per second each consecutive minute after that until the horses hit 10 meters per second. And then the horses would get bumped up to 14 meters per second for 2 minutes after that before slowly being decreased back down. The horses went through this exercise regime for a few weeks. That way they could get adjusted to it before the trial came around. And where the previous study, they didn't add any incline to their treadmill, this study, they put 3.5% incline because it elicited maximal heart rate as well as induced EIPH on all horses, as they were able to notice fresh blood in the horse's trachea. They definitely ran these horses a lot harder than the other ones.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like, and then just 3.5% incline, it's not a lot, but that's a lot. Like, that's a lot. On a treadmill, when you're already going full speed, that's a lot.
That's a lot, and they didn't get much warm-up before going into that.
Ugh. What was their living condition leading up? Like, are they just hanging out in a stall and then are coming out cold and doing this exercise?
Like, they're being kept in okay conditions, but to be pulled out of the stall and be, like, sprinting right away, that's a lot of strain on the body.
It is, and it definitely, like, is the best protocol to ensure bleeding. You know what I mean? Like, that's the best way to get blood is to not warm up your horse and go to extreme amounts of speed and incline.
Also, what makes it just a tiny bit sadder is that they noted none of the horses could actually maintain 14 meters per second for 120 seconds. None of the horses were able to keep up with that despite vigorous human encouragement.
Oh.
But it sounds like the ponies were really struggling.
Also, let's just point out that by encouragement, they meant punishment.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Unless you're standing out there with a carrot, that's not encouragement. That's punishment.
Well, they say vigorous human encouragement. Like, okay, so you were shouting and probably smacking them on the butt to keep them
probably
going.
Probably they had like an umbrella and a plastic bag out behind them.
So what they measured when they took this test was they measured core temp, arterial and mixed venous blood gases, pH, and blood lactate and ammonia concentrates. What they found at the end of that study was that there was no statistically significant differences between the control and nasal strip experiments. However, an important measurement to take, especially when you're gonna say it in the title of your study, would be pulmonary gas exchange, especially when you're evaluating exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging.
Sure.
They didn't measure that or take it into account.
Interesting.
Even though their study specifically says nasal strips do not affect pulmonary gas exchange. But how can you say that if you didn't even look at it during your study?
Maybe they just deduce based off of the other things that it wouldn't have.
Maybe, but I'm not so sure you can put that in your title if you didn't look at it and you didn't quantify it.
I think you could put anything in the title you want.
I guess, but it just seems misleading.
I don't disagree. I'm just saying it's, you know, not like a song where the lyrics and the name are the same.
So another thing that they talked about was they discussed that all horses experience exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging despite the use of nasal strips or lack thereof. But they failed to mention the horses were going through a exercise regime that would induce this, that would cause that hemorrhaging in their lungs no matter what. What they also failed to mention is that they didn't really talk about the reduction if there was a difference too much. And they failed to say, they just said that there was pulmonary hemorrhaging present. What they failed to mention was that there is no known method to fully eliminate exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging under those conditions.
Sure. And I mean, you also have horses that are known bleeders and not to be known bleeders. So like not all horses bleed. So you have to start with horses to make like to test if it has any impact. You have to start with horses that you know bleed. And then you're starting with horses you know bleed that are in the most like severe protocol. Blood would be expected to be found in the lungs and in the trachea.
No, it wasn't. And in the study, the little section they talked about, the EIPH, which is a really big part of what they were talking about in this whole study, was just two sentences long saying it was seen in both groups of horses.
Interesting.
As their results. And I was like, wait, there's a lot more I need to know. Like, where is more? They didn't provide that many numbers. They provided some numbers, but they didn't provide that many numbers that went to support all the things they were saying. Not that I doubt them, but I would have rather seen all the numbers like I had of the previous study.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
And lastly, images from this study show that the nasal strips weren't being applied correctly. They were placed too far above the horse's nostrils. So it's really hard to say that there was absolutely no difference if you were applying the product incorrectly. Don't doubt that there could have been, you know, under different conditions, way less of a difference between using a nasal strip or not. But I think you have to apply it correctly to count the results.
For sure. I would say that's step number one. Make sure product is applied correctly.
Right. And kind of with these red flags that turned up with this study that said there was no impact whether the horses wore a nasal strip or didn't wear a nasal strip, after reviewing the other six or so studies that looked at the same thing that drew different results, I feel confident saying that flare strips do something.
And they all say that it does help reduce it when applied correctly.
They all concluded from there that there was a difference when it was applied correctly, that there was an improvement in exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging. And I actually got so distracted by a company having research for once that I completely spaced and didn't look into who owns them at all. But as far as when this product would be effective, I would definitely say this is something that is effective for racehorses, since the big selling point and most of, if not all, the studies were looking at exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging, and we know racehorses are prone to this.
Yeah.
I would say it would be a very effective product using it with racehorses. In addition to this, most, if not all, studies done were looking at nasal strips being used on racehorses themselves. And I think it's fair to say that racehorses have an extremely demanding job, can be a little bit more demanding than what we put on our event horses. Typically, a pace we're going doesn't induce that hemorrhaging, that lung bleeding.
Typically, but that's the problem is that unless you're actually looking for lung bleeding, you may not know what's happening because it is often only going to get to the trachea or only in the lungs. It doesn't always come out the nose. And so if you have a horse that does have a nosebleed during exercise, obviously that's like a big, big red flag. But with a lot of other horses, you might not know that they're bleeding. So it's also like a big issue with barrel racers. they want their horses to run as hard as they can for 15 seconds, which doesn't seem like a very long time. But bleeding in quarter horses in rodeo and barrel racing is an issue.
Which, that actually brings me to my next point and my conclusion, is that looking at all the research, I think those that would benefit the most from the nasal flare strips would be racehorses, those doing endurance, and rodeo, especially barrel horses, because they are doing those sprints.
Yeah.
That would create the perfect environment for that hemorrhaging to occur.
Yeah.
There was a concern mentioned in a few of the studies during the discussion part that was talking about, while yes, nasal strips appear to reduce the resistance in the horse's nasal passageway, that perhaps this brings up the concern that reducing that resistance could alter the respiratory cycle timing and the energetic requirements of the expiratory, the exhaling muscles. This aspect, though, has not been investigated or researched. I totally understand that it hasn't been looked into yet. So it is just, a question floating out there around, does it impact the other muscles? Is that resistance there for a reason in the horse's respiratory system?
Yeah.
I would say if you're doing something that you're concerned about lung bleeding or that, that hemorrhaging, I would say use them. They're not going to hurt and they might make it better, On their website, they say that the strips are clinically proven to help horses, which, looking through all the research, that's true. It might just not be proven to help with the goal or purpose in which you might be purchasing the nasal strips for if you're going at a lower level or you're not quite doing those sprints, those hard sprints where the nasal strips would be super effective for. But if you feel more comfortable running around cross country with a nasal strip, I would honestly say go for it. I'm pleasantly surprised that they do make a difference.
I'm still skeptical from the standpoint of, if we're talking about improving a horse's ability to breathe, wouldn't just taking the bit out of their mouth be better?
Well, yeah, but bitless isn't allowed on cross country. You can put whatever the hell you want in your horse's mouth, but you can't ride bitless.
I know, and you can stick a sticker on their nose to help them breathe, but you can't ride bitless. And I get it. Everyone's afraid that your horse is going to bolt, and people who ride bitless have zero control of their horses. I totally understand. It is kind of one of those funny things. You can load their mouth with metal. You could put a harsh noseband and a flash noseband. You could do all kinds of stuff that would be interfering with their ability to breathe. But don't worry, you can also put on a flare strip.
There's no room for logic in the horse world. But one claim they also mention on Flair's website, they have a few things that they say may happen if you use a flare strip. And one of their go-tos is that flare strips may impact stride efficiency by reducing airway resistance, because horses' stride and breathing are inherently linked together. So if a horse takes a longer stride, they can take a deeper breath, and vice versa. If they take a deeper breath, they can take a bigger stride. However, no one's actually looked into that. If the nasal strips make a big enough difference to impact the horse's stride. So if you're buying it to make your horse's stride longer, I would say it's not worth it. If you're buying it to help in cases with the exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging, I would say go for it.
All right. Are we ready? Are you ready for Ice Vibe Boots?
I'm ready to vibe out to these Ice Vibes.
So Ice Vibe Boots are owned by Horsewear Products. So we also talked about Horsewear in episode 17. They had that crystal blanket, or what they referred to as the Ionic Rambo blanket, but it's a crystal blanket.
Oh, yeah.
So they have three therapy products, which is that Ionic Rambo blanket, the Ice Vibe Boots, and Sports Vibe. So we're now on our second of their three therapy products. I actually hadn't realized how long Ice Vibe Boots had been on the market. They were trademarked in 2012, and the earliest ad and discussion I found about them was in 2013. And by 2013, I think they'd already sold 6,000 pairs. So they've been out there for a while.
Are Ice Vibe Boots just ice boots, or do they have another aspect to them?
They're ice and their vibes.
Okay.
Ice and massage is what those two words stand for. So instead of, they're not like a massage boot like you would think of. I'm like a massage chair. It's not that kind of massage where it has a mechanism that's moving around. It has vibration. So it has a little panel in it.
Oh.
Produces vibration.
That's where the vibe comes from.
Yes. So that's what the vibration means. And I'm about to get all into what it is. So don't worry. So their trademark, which was registered to Horsewear Products in 2012, states that it is Ice Vibe trademark is used in the following business: battery-operated wraparound pads and sleeves for improving blood circulation in muscle strain injury for application to limbs and other parts of the human or animal body, blood circulation therapy boots. But essentially what they have done is they've patented the vibration portion of it that goes into the boots, and then the boots themselves just go on top of an ice pack, essentially. I do think it's interesting that their trademark mentions muscle strain and muscle strain injury, because while humans have muscles in their arms and legs, horses don't have muscles below their knees and hocks, right? It's tendons and ligaments. And so these boots are sort of created and packaged around a lot of assumptions that are made about the benefits of massage on muscles. But you're not massaging muscles. You're massaging tendons and ligaments. So the question really is, do those same assumptions apply to the massage of tendons and ligaments? I also found their patent, their European patent for the Ice Vibe boots. And again, for their patent, they were just patenting the technology for the vibration pads themselves. They didn't need to patent the boot, and they didn't need to patent the ice pack. Those are already taken care of. But they did patent a special vibration tube, or like, it's a pad. So it's like these four little vibration pillows, essentially, or nodules that are all connected, and they're sewn so that they are like flexible and they are rechargeable. So it is something that you can charge up the pad, and then you put it in the boot and you disconnect it, and the power, it's all like held within the boot. So there's no wires or cords. I found it really funny because they do actually talk about why they've designed them this way, because in their patent, it says, however, it has been found that where a horse, particularly a young horse, is left unattended during treatment with the boot, he can interfere with the boot and cause damage to the wiring between the rechargeable battery control unit and the vibration panel, and or himself. So I really appreciate that, like,
he can just mess up with everything.
Yeah, young horses, they're not to be trusted with rechargeable boots all on their own. So their patent and a lot of their marketing is all about how it's like a self-contained unit. They have three different boots. They have the tendon boots, the knee boots, and the hawk boots. And they have a panel, or like a pocket inside of them, that you can put the vibration panel into, so you could decide where exactly in the boot you want the vibration to be. You have a couple different options, but there's only like so many options for where to put it around a hock or a knee. So I did find a 2013 article that was published in the Irish Times, which is totally apparently a thing. And this article in 2013 interviewed the creator, the inventor of the Ice Vibe boots. It's kind of an interesting story, but this story, the article is titled Booting Up Idea to Soothe Horse Legs. And this was published in August 2013. By the time this article was published, like I said, Horsewear had already sold 6,000 pairs of the Ice Vibe boots, and they had already won several invention awards, including the BETA Innovation Award, and the circulation boot had previously been awarded a finalist by the Irish Times in their Irish Times Inter-Trade Ireland Innovation Awards. They weren't very old at this time, but they were racking up lots of awards and being sold. So this article interviews Louisa Williams, who she is from New Zealand. She grew up in New Zealand, and then she ended up moving to Ireland and got a job at the Coolmore Stud Farm, which is a famous stud farm in Ireland. And she began doing a lot of racehorse training and working with racehorses in Ireland. And it was her sort of love for horses that inspired her to create these boots. It's not really a surprise when she says she loves horses and how it upset her to see animals get injured and end their careers. Horses have really poor circulation in their lower legs, she explains, and I think one of the biggest problems is that they work hard and then spend so much time standing in stables. It's not ideal for healing. One horse in particular caught her attention when she saw him building little hills in his stable to try and get relief from sore tendons. I remember thinking if I could just help increase circulation, it would help relieve the soreness. So I started massaging his legs, she says. Every day I wasn't racing, I kept reading the latest tendon research papers.
Wait,
do you need to interject, or do you want me to finish reading?
I mean, increased circulation doesn't, I don't know, let's say walking around in a pasture increase circulation?
That's a possibility. I mean, yes, I do not.
Doesn't regular turnout help?
Well, to increase circulation, the frog is a really important part of that increased circulation. It's not just like you rubbing their legs. It is their frog is part of that circulation. And no, a horse doesn't have poor circulation in their leg. They've evolved and developed to walk. I think they like walk 20 to 30 miles a day as a wild horse. And so a lot of their systems have developed around this. And this will come up later in some of the research is that their systems don't work when they're not moving. They really need to be moving in order to have functioning circulatory systems. I think her heart was in the right place when she came up with this idea. I think it's these boots were maybe started with some faulty logic. Also, so to continue the story of the boots, Williams bought a plug-in neck massager, like the ones we mentioned, and re-engineered it to make a boot for horses, and even ended up incorporating a wine cooler to keep the legs chilled. This product, she's actually talking about her original prototype, may actually have been somewhat useful. As it has evolved away from this.
Huh.
So I knew that icing horses' tendons for long periods could make their legs too cold and create an inflammatory response. So one of the ideas behind IceFi boots was that the legs wouldn't get as cold due to the combination of cold and massage. And that was a question I was actually been trying to figure out the entire time when I was looking into these boots, because I was like, why cold and massage at the same time? Like, these seem really contradictory, right? We know to ice a horse's legs is supposed to slow that inflammatory process. It's supposed to stop swelling, and massage is supposed to increase the circulation, right? So those seem like they're super, like, at a conflict.
Yeah, very contradictory.
So how did this idea get to Horsewear? Essentially, she just emailed the company. She was like, hey, I have this idea, but I need help creating this product. And she ended up working with a couple different firms to make better prototypes. She got some grant money. And eventually, Thomas, the president of Horsewear, did email her back. And they had a meeting, and the rest is history. He agreed to take on her product. He also gave her a job as a designer at Horsewear to finish and further the design of the product, which I think is cool. It's something Horsewear didn't have to do. Like, they could have just bought the product from her, and they ended up like bringing her onto the team to help complete the design of these boots.
That is really cool.
And I do like, I'm gonna be honest, and I'll say it a couple times, I really do like the company Horsewear. I do not think Horsewear is a bad company at all. I think they're a good company.
Okay. Noted.
Like, I'm just saying, I'm not getting sketchy vibes. I've never gotten sketchy vibes from Horsewear. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, there's a lot of companies that we go to
I like Horsewear.
Yeah, go to their webpage. You're like, oh, this is, I'm already uncomfortable. So what does their website say? Ice Vibe does what ice can't, which is a very interesting tagline, because what does that mean? So they package these boots as Ice Vibe therapeutic horse boots, combine the effects of cooling and massage therapy to reduce soreness and swelling, help boost circulation, and stimulate healing. They also, ice alone relieves pain, but doesn't promote healing. Horsewear IceFi boots do more to prevent, reduce, and repair injury. Ice alone relieves pain, but doesn't promote healing. That is straight from their website and what they say about these products. I do think it's interesting that their marketing is a little bit more targeted and has more items that it does than their trademark or their patent does. And part of that is because in order to get these devices approved, they have to fall into a category of like an already existing device. In order to get quick approval from the FDA to sell this device on the market, it's the fastest way to do it is to say that your product is the same as something that's already out there. So that's why when you read a lot of legal documents, it will say that the product does one thing or only does massage, just only for circulation improvement. But then you go to a website and it's going to have all these other sales pitches, because their website can make a little bit bigger claims that their legal documents and paperwork couldn't make.
The more you know.
So IceFi boots are rechargeable, vibrating boots that help to boost circulation in horses' legs by creating a massage effect. They combine the effects of cooling and massage therapy to effectively treat strains, ligament, and tendon damage. The massage effect helps to stimulate the lymph system to remove soreness and swelling, as well as improving circulation. Everyday wear and tear on joints can be managed with daily use of the boots. Rehabilitation through injury can be achieved more effectively. Using the boots before you ride can assist you to prepare your horse's legs for exercise in the stable. They do this by creating a massaging effect, increasing blood flow to the tendons and ligaments, making them more elastic, which could help reduce the risk of injury. The massaging effect also helps to stimulate the lymph system, similar to exercise, to help reduce existing inflammation. We'll get into it. I don't think they've made too many crazy claims, but the more research I did, the crazier all of that became. I'll not bury the lead. Don't waste your money on these. These are not worth the $300. Like I said, they have three different sets. They will each run you a pair, whether it's the tendon boots, the knee boots, or the hawk boots, will each run you $300. While their website doesn't make any big research claims or link to any sketchy claims, I would actually expect for $300 there to be some research. Why is there no research? Why haven't you, why isn't there even a poorly edited YouTube video that explains basic biology to me? I think Horsewear is a smart enough company that knows better than to do some of that stuff. Not that they haven't in the past, but I do think it's on purpose. There's no research or huge claims made. The reason I think it's also kind of weird is because in 2013, Louisa, that article in the Irish Times, says they're doing tons of research. She says they had tons of case studies. They were doing a larger research project that year that was going to include horses and a project looking into this product for dogs. So we know they're doing research. We knew they did it at least in 2013, but where is it? And not even referenced on their website.
Yeah, that's really...
Like, their website doesn't even reference it.
Like, at all? They don't even make vague references to it?
There's no research on Horseware's website. Like, nothing. And I was just looking at Ice Vibe Boots. I didn't, like, look back to see if they had research for any of their other products.
That's super weird. I wonder why they never published or released those studies that they said they were doing. Or maybe it was something they planned on doing, and that's why she mentioned it. And then they just... didn't do it.
I don't know why they didn't publish it. Or why they didn't mention it. I think by the end you'll understand why they didn't. And it's also probably the same reason why they didn't really do it for, why we had a hard time finding information for Theragun as well. We'll get there. But before we get to that part, let's talk ice. Let's talk research around the first half of that boot's name. Ice. The big question is, does ice heal, right? That's how they're promoting this product, that this product works better than ice because ice doesn't heal. What does ice actually do? Before I get too far into discussion about ice, I'm going to do this research as if we all still accept that RICE, rest, ice, compression, and elevate is the best treatment method. There has been a bit of research in the last few years that has kind of looked at debunking rest and ice as being appropriate processes for treating an injury. And this is because when you get injured and have a soft tissue injury, that area will swell. That swelling is your body's normal response, and that swelling brings things to your body, such as hormones, such as white blood cells, things like that, to heal. And when you are using ice, you have the potential to slow and delay that healing process. Right now, most research has been focused on RICE, rest, ice, compression, elevate. And that same method has been taken and applied in the horse world. So we're going to look at this product from that perspective, if that ice is still the best practice.
Okay.
But it might not be. Physical, like, therapists are now moving into, they have a new acronym that is Peace and Love is the new acronym. And that's too many words for me to remember what that means.
I was going to say, what the heck does that stand for?
A lot of things. I don't know. But, like, instead of rest, they want you to unload, unweight the injured leg or injured part of your body. And then you start to, like, reload it. And exercise is actually a really important component of it. But again, regardless, we're going that we do ice, we do rest, and obviously we can't elevate for horses, so I say we just throw out rice altogether and go with something else. So to start to answer the question of does ice heal, I wanted to know, like, what people are actually using this boot to heal. What injuries was this boot, the Ice Vibe boot, being purchased for? And so there were two main injuries that came up. The first is obviously soft tissue injuries like tendon damage or ligament damage. That's what the website itself says this boot is good for. And then the second injury that I found really common in a lot of reviews was people were buying this to treat wind gulls or wind puffs. That was a really common reason to purchase this boot.
Oh, interesting.
Both tendon injuries and wind gulls, wind puffs, are recommended that cold therapy is the best way to treat these injuries, to keep them cold and then to use compression. I found a 2015 article that was published on Vet Times website. This article was published by Mr. Andy Fisk Jackson, who is an associate professor in equine surgery and deputy head of Equine Referrals Hospital. So he is based in the UK. He is a veterinarian surgeon. He is a vet himself, and he specializes in soft tissue injuries. So in 2015, he wrote a whole protocol that was circulated for other vets on, like, best way to treat and deal with tendon injuries. In that article, he talks about tendon injuries needing to be during their acute phase, which is when they are initially happen. So diagnosing that initial injury in the acute phase is immediately after it happens. There's a lot of inflammation, a lot of heat, pain, and swelling over the affected structure. And the horse is usually severely lame for the next, like, 2 weeks. During that phase, he recommends, and this is, like, England's protocol, is to use cold therapy in order to reduce inflammation and to reduce pain. And he recommends that occurs for 20 minutes 3 to 4 times a day. His recommendation is that the water or the ice you're using to do that cold therapy needs to be between 41 and 48 degrees Fahrenheit or 5 to 9 degrees Celsius. That's the gold standard. So when we're looking at ice boots, we have to look at boots that can get our horse's legs to 41 to 48 degrees or 5 to 9 degrees Celsius. Of course, if you're like me, you were like, how do they pick that number? Like, how do we know that's the most effective range? I looked at the study he referenced for that protocol just out of curiosity. How do you think they picked that number?
Because it worked for humans?
No, it was the setting on the spa they had. Like all great science, it's based off of what one guy did one time. Like, why is this so, like, this happens all the time where they're like, yep. So the spa set for 41, so standard is 41 degrees. I don't know if it's the best, but that is what the standard is. I also want to point out that while Dr. Andy Fisk Jackson recommends 3 to 4 times a day for 20 minutes, the study he was using only recommended 10 minutes 3 times a week.
Huh. He really stepped it up from there, didn't he?
He really did. And I think that is part of the reason why ice is being questioned as, is it even useful? Because I think people were like, well, it works and it's good for 10 minutes. So do it 20 minutes for 3 to 4 times a day. I think it's one of those things where like, if it's good in small doses, it's great in large doses. And we have continued to apply that to everything going forward.
Interesting. You know, I have heard in various practices, especially with athletes, that they're told to only ice something for like 10 minutes, but to do it in short intervals. So if you do it for longer, you can cause damage.
Yeah, I think.
Or can hinder the body's natural healing.
The new recommendation is like 5 to 10 minutes for icing. And I think it's like once to twice a day max for humans. We don't have a new recommendation for horses. What I just read is the recommendation for treating tendon injuries in horses.
Then we need to get a new spa.
I know, we need a new spa to know what we're supposed to do now. Oh my gosh, it's like ruins. I feel like it. What does the spa want now? I just feel like it's so like, I don't know, it's so silly. But they were actually using one of those like walk-in saltwater spas. So it wasn't even just regular water. It was salt water with like salt and magnesium in it. That protocol is what he's taken and applied. And he is a surgeon. Like he is experienced. The reason I used his protocol is because he's promoting that as the standard all over. And he is the expert in this, one of the experts in this field. So that's what's recommended. And that's what these boots are supposed to be designed to. That is the goal of designing these boots. That's the standard they're trying to hit.
Okay.
Let's figure out if they even hit that standard, right? Can they hit that mark? Can they get the horse's legs to the correct temperature? So a 2016 study titled A Comparison of 7 Methods for Continuous Therapeutic Cooling of the Equine Digit looked at exactly that, 7 different methods for trying to cool the horse's leg. So this study, unfortunately with icing and studying icing like research right now, it is so focused on laminitis and what is the best protocol for a laminitic horse that it was really hard to kind of like find anything that was looking at icing other parts of the horse's body and is it even effective. This study was what looked at a bunch of different methods, but they were measuring the temperature of the hoof wall, and we can like shrug if that's the best place to take a temperature or not, if that's the most applicable, but I think it does a good job of demonstrating the effectiveness of these different methods. So they had 7 horses. Each horse had one leg that was in the ice method and one leg that was used as the control. They were hooked up with a thermometer, and then they were monitored for 8 hours. On every hour, the leg temperature would be taken and documented. This was a study that I didn't buy, so I didn't know if they clarified this at all, but I was able to find a lot of information from this study. I got enough information without buying it. The only thing I wasn't able to answer was how often they reapplied these methods based off the temperatures and looking at how they were logged over the 8 hours. It's clear these methods were reapplied. I just don't know the frequency of which they were reapplied.
Okay.
So for these legs, their control leg was 32 degrees Celsius or 89 degrees Fahrenheit. That's one more complaint I have with this study is they did the average leg temperature together. And then each individual treatment was broken down. And I point this out is because horses' legs were not all 89 degrees. Their legs are all obviously going to be different temperatures, a degree or two. And so that degree or two difference can make a big impact on how well a method worked. So the first method was a plastic bag filled with ice that was then wrapped around the hoof. So the ice wasn't actually touching the horse's leg that had the plastic as a buffer. This is considered a dry method for icing. That was able to get the horse's leg the coldest after 2 hours. It got the hoof to 20 degrees Celsius or 68 degrees Fahrenheit after 2 hours.
Not even close to cold.
Not even close to cold. And that was ice in a plastic bag on the hoof. Method two was just an ice pack, like a typical gel ice pack, something like what Ice Vibe would be using. That got it cold. The coldest it got it was after 2 hours, and that was 19 degrees Celsius or 66 degrees Fahrenheit. And then it kind of ranged for the next couple hours between 68 degrees Fahrenheit and 66 degrees Fahrenheit. Not super cold.
That's all 20 degrees warmer than what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, absolutely. The third method that they used was putting the hoof pack on both the hoof and the leg, because they were thinking if we got more of the leg cold, then the blood coming into the hoof would be cold, right? It's been cold longer.
Sure.
That, again, got temperatures down to 22 to 23 Celsius, 71, 73 degrees Fahrenheit. It did go down to 69 degrees and 66. It kind of bounced around, but the ice pack, ice boot, again, we're looking for something in the 40s, not in the 40s yet. So the fourth method was a wet method, and that was what they used called an ice boot or an ice chap. So essentially it's like the waders. They don't go all the way around the horse's hoof. They just go around the horse's coronet band, and then you fill it with ice and water. I do want to point out that this one didn't perform as well as it should have, because again, they were taking the temperature of the hoof, and this boot was only on the leg. That got it down to 64 degrees Fahrenheit after 4 hours or 18 degrees Celsius. And then it quickly rose to 77 degrees Fahrenheit. So method five was those big yellow whirlpool boots, where they basically looks like the horse is wearing yellow galoshes or rubber boots that go up to about their knee, and it's got a bunch of tubes. I think we've seen those all before.
Yes.
After 1 hour, the hoof was 41 degrees. And it stayed between 35 and 37 degrees for the following 8 hours. So that's 2 to 3 degrees Celsius. So check mark, the big yellow whirlpool boots work if we're trying to get to that range. The sixth method was just a plastic bag filled with ice. So then the horse stood inside of the plastic bag and it was wrapped around like the hoof and the pastern. After 1 hour, the hoof was 6 degrees or 42 degrees Fahrenheit. And then it hovered around 41 degrees for the next 8 hours. Good, it worked, right? You've got to get the leg, you've got to use a wet method, and you've got to get ice on skin for it to work.
Yeah.
The seventh method was interesting because basically I think it's the reason this whole study was done, because they were testing a prototype of a dry boot that used coolant. So it was a hose system that ran basically a closed system that ran chilled coolant, like in a refrigerator, around the horse's leg. It was a pressurized system to keep the pressure against the leg. And it was complicated with hoses going into the horse's leg and then going out to this unit that was running the coolant continuously. And it worked. It got the leg down to 46 degrees after 1 hour or 41 degrees after about 2 hours. You can refrigerate the horse's leg. But as Horsewear has pointed out, the less cords and hoses, the better.
I don't know if you want your young horse getting access to refrigerator coolant.
Oh, absolutely not. No, no. I would imagine the horse has to be well-supervised and slightly sedated, probably to keep them away from that method.
Oh, yeah. Could you imagine if they pop that? I bet it's not good against the skin.
Oh, no, not good at all. That study proved one thing, right? That if it's not touching and making direct contact, that dry methods, unless it's refrigerant, do not work. And there's a reason for this. A 2018 study titled Thermodynamic Effects of Commercially Available Ice Boots sort of starts to dive into this. And I'll kind of give you a little bit more information as we go as well. But this study was really interesting. It was done in California, and they had professional choice ice boots. So those look just like professional choices, SMB boots or sports medicine boots, but they have the ice like pockets sewn into them. So you put the whole boot into the freezer. What they did is they had 6 horses. They exercised the horses first. They went through a little walk, trot, canter routine in a round pen. And then they were placed in the ice boot, one ice boot on one leg, and then the opposite leg was for control. And the horse wore the boot for about 20 minutes or until the legs were the same temperature. So how long do you think it took on average for the legs to be the same temperature?
I don't know.
14 minutes. It took 14 minutes for the legs to be the same temperature wearing professional choice boots. That's too short of time for the ice to be effective. And the thing with averages is some horses were a lot faster and some horses were a lot slower. But it's also way more complicated than that.
Also, though, what do they mean by the same temperature? Because that's still, even if they end up being the same temperature, it might not be the temperature you want.
Well, they were just like comparing like how long did it take the ice basically to heat up, right? Because the reason those don't work is because in order to cool something, it's heat transfer, right? There, you need to be able to transfer heat to the colder object. So hot object to cold object has to lose heat. And the more surface area and the more it circulates and moves around, the more area you have for that heat to transfer. When you're using those ice boots or gel packs, it can't transfer that heat very well because it's not moving. It's right, that same pad is able to absorb that heat really quickly. You also have a barrier between the leg and the ice that's also heating up in the process. So it's melting very quickly. And horses' legs are designed to withstand the cold really well.
Right, right.
So for this study, they used Fleur technology, which I do have a little complaint with because Fleur is not designed to take temperatures at this small of degrees. Because what they were doing was they were using the thermo camera to see it go up by like 23.1, 23.2. And that's not what Fleur is designed for. Fleur is designed for if you are a search and rescue and you are looking for a body in the woods, like it's that kind of heat difference. But Fleur is not designed for these minute temperature differences. It's designed for big temperature differences. So I do have a little issue with that. But what they did is they took the temperature of the horse's legs before work, after work, and then immediately after putting the boot on. So basically a minute zero. And then they took the horse's leg temperature for every 2 minutes until it was over, until the legs were the same temperature. For horse one, his leg without the boot after work was 24 degrees Celsius or 75 degrees Fahrenheit. And then at minute zero with the boot on, it was 20 degrees Celsius or 68 degrees Fahrenheit. So his boot with the leg was immediately colder. It took him 6 minutes to heat that leg up.
So did it heat it back up after you took the ice off?
So the ice stayed on for a full 20 minutes, but the both legs were the same temperature after 6 minutes.
Oh, that's not great news.
That's not great news at all. And then looking at the other horses, so horse number six, his actually lasted for, I think, like 24 minutes before they were the same temperature. But that's a little bit misleading because when you actually look at it, almost all horses' legs were the same temperature or had heated drastically in the first 2 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So these boots, cold packed boots, ice boots of this nature, work for about 2 minutes. I don't, like, Ice Vibe, if you're buying it for the icing purposes, isn't worth it. It's not going to be able to cool their legs down at all.
And you know what? That would line up with this last summer when Trin, her first time when she got cellulitis and I was trying to ice her leg. I know it was really hot outside, but I had a gel ice pack because I didn't have access to ice boots that I applied directly to her leg. And it lasted maybe like 5 to 10 minutes, 10 absolute max before it was lukewarm.
Yeah. And that's honestly one of the biggest complaints about ice boots. Like in the reviews, anyone who's going to have a bad review is just complaining that the ice packs don't last more than 10 minutes. And it makes sense why that when they were taking the temperature every hour, those legs were the same because they weren't taking the temperature immediately when they put the boot on. So if you're looking at any marketing or anything that says proven to drop the horse's legs temperature degrees, know that that was likely taken at minute zero. And 2 minutes later, the legs are warm again.
Oh, sneaky advertising once again.
Yeah. Whether we agree with 41 to 48 degrees being the perfect range for icing a horse's legs, we can all agree it's probably not like 20 or 66 degrees, which is what a lot of these boots were at, right? Like a lot of these boots were at 20 degrees almost immediately. That's t-shirt weather. Like the boots don't get cold enough. So don't buy them if you need to ice a horse's leg. I saw people asking if they should buy these for their laminated horses. Please know that icing a horse with laminitis is very, very different than icing a horse with a soft tissue injury. Please do not waste your money on these boots for laminated horses. To ice a laminated horse, you realize you have to ice for like 72 hours straight. You have to change the ice and water every hour to 2 hours. If your vet is telling you it's okay to ice for 20 minutes, a couple times a day for your laminated horse, that goes against current science. Current science is 72 hours of constant cold. You're trying to cause hypothermia. So please do not buy these boots for laminated courses. Save that money for a good farrier or save it for whirlpool boots, like something that's actually going to get the legs cold enough.
Interesting.
And that's only the first half of these boots, right? Because they have two names, ice and vibe. So let's talk about the vibe portion of these boots. Vibe is for vibration or massage, right? These boots, the other thing that they do is they massage the horse's leg, which is something ice can't do, which makes sense. Like, I've never seen, like, ice isn't really big into massages. It's just not like that kind. It doesn't give back to you in that sort of way. To answer this question, what is the benefits of massage therapy? I found a continuing education article from 2002 titled Massage Therapy in Horses, Assessing Its Effectiveness from Empirical Data in Humans and Animals. So this was prepared by Dr. David Ramey, who is a DVM, is a doctor of veterinary medicine based in Los Angeles or outside of Los Angeles, and he's been practicing since 1987. Because this is a continuing education credit pamphlet, if we pass the test at the end, we'll all get 1.5 contact hours towards that degree we have. So just letting you know.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, because this pamphlet, I was like, oh, this is it? I could pass this test probably without reading the pamphlet. But essentially, what this 2002 continuing education article does is debunk everything we ever thought we knew about massage. That is why Theraguns didn't try to answer some of these questions with their research, and why they tried to prove funky things like, can I jump farther? Because this massage doesn't do anything. I was shocked. Like, blew my mind. One of the biggest myths about massage is that it improves your muscle blood flow, right? This whole product is about increased circulation. That can't happen. So your body is a very fine-tuned machine. The amount of blood that goes to a muscle, organ, or tissue is dependent on what that muscle's like nutrient needs are. Massage does not change that muscle's metabolic needs. Exercise does, right? If I'm exercising, now my muscles need more oxygen, or they now have an increased nutrient demand. That will increase the amount of blood that's flowing. But that increase in blood is triggered by my muscles contracting, my muscles moving and working. If I'm just standing still and getting a massage, those muscles aren't demanding more oxygen or more nutrients. So massage can't increase the circulation. What it can do is temporarily affect the circulation. Imagine, right, you're getting a massage and you're putting pressure on that muscle or on that portion of the body. You, with that pressure, may be restricting blood flow. You may be having an effect on blood flow. And when you remove that hand from the massage, that vein can reinflate and blood can rush back in. And so basically, there is no proven study that has found that blood flow can be increased by using massage. And this study was like, these studies were looking at hand massage. They weren't looking at like tools, right? Like that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Like your muscles, the amount of blood they need is predetermined.
Yeah, but that goes against everything everyone else has ever told me.
It goes against everything everyone else. Like, you're right. Go to Google and Google ways to improve blood flow. Massage will pop up every single time because it feels like that should work, right? If that makes sense. And it doesn't. I was so thrown by this that I actually had to go and do more research because I was like, there's no way this guy's right. And I found a 2017 literature review titled Determining the Benefits of Massage Mechanisms, a Review of Literature, that found the same thing, that none of the studies were able to prove blood flow increased to the muscles. However, this literature review did point out one thing that the doctor, the vet didn't, is that a lot of that might have been due to the equipment that they were using. That the equipment they were using was not very capable of measuring blood flow. And a lot of that had to do with it not being able to move or bump around, that the equipment had to be very still. And yet while you're giving a massage, there's a lot of movement. However, they did point out that there was one study, both of them commented on this, that use pulsed wave Doppler ultrasound. And that is a very specific type of ultrasound that uses sound waves to detect sort of the changes in an item and the characteristics of that object. And it is considered one of the best methods for testing blood's precise location and its velocity in real time. So it is the best method for testing if there's extra blood or blood is moving into that area. And again, that study found no increase in blood flow with massage.
I don't know how to respond to that. I don't want to believe you.
I know. Like, I'm so torn because, like, the other thing that I found is that when, and I couldn't find, like, this verified in any of the resources I wanted to, but it makes sense, is that, like, when you receive a massage, that releases nitrogen from your blood, and that release of nitrogen during the massage will increase the size of the blood vessels and release other things like histamines. And that's why you itch sometimes after getting a massage. It's not because of like liquids or anything, but I don't know if you ever have it, like the Theragun, when we use the Theragun, like I kind of itch sometimes after using it. And the internet says that's because histamines are being released, Jerry, because my blood vessels have opened back up. But I think the whole point is that that is temporary. That is a temporary moment, and that no real blood flow was increased to those muscles.
Okay, but just because massage may not increase blood flow doesn't mean it's not good for other things.
It's proven to be really good for relaxation. That's like the one thing everyone can agree on, that it relaxes you and it relaxes your muscles. And that leads to some of these other feelings, that you're not as sore, you're not as tight. But a lot of that's just based off of relaxation.
And it's not exactly the whole promoting healing.
Yeah.
Necessarily. I mean, a relaxed body probably heals better than a tense body, but not to the degree we think of increased blood circulation is going to heal that whatever sooner.
Right. And almost every therapy product talks about how they increase circulation. Everyone, like, back on track, that's their sales pitch. Increases circulation. But when you think about it, it makes sense that it wouldn't. But then I'm also torn because I'm like, no way, guys, come on, it's got to be real. Like, it has to. It feels like it does.
I tell you what, you believe in it and I'll not believe in it. And then somewhere in the middle is logic.
Sure. Sounds good.
Because I don't know how to respond to that.
I know. I'm torn too. Like, I kind of want to believe it. Kind of. One of those was from 2000. The other is from 2017. That is almost a 20-year span in time, and no new studies were done. They were still looking at the same studies. Again, all of those studies were in humans. I know the vet was like, hey, this applies to horses as well. I think it does. I don't think horses are that different from humans, where their muscles would behave differently.
I don't know. They just don't have muscles in their legs.
Yeah. So that's a big difference. And that's something we're going to circle back around to, because, right, we just discussed muscles and there's not muscles in the horse's legs. So these boots aren't massaging muscles. They're massaging something else. So one of the other claims these boots made was about improving like the lymph node, the lymphatic system, and being able to increase the lymphatic system's circulation. This is something that both studies are not both studies. I apologize. Just the 2002 study said was not true. They said this was false. And I do think this is partially due to there not being a ton of research, and research into the equine lymphatic system is mostly done by the Veterinary University in Hanover, Germany. What is the lymphatic system? It's actually very similar to our circulatory system and very complementary to our blood vessels. It basically drains a fluid called lymph. And lymph is a fluid that has like leaked from your blood vessels into your tissues. And the lymphatic system basically like gets all of this leaked fluid and gathers it back up and determines if it should be recycled or if it should like leave the body.
Ew.
I know. I thought that was really gross too. It's referred to as our body's like sewage system. It also does some other good things, like it is part of your immune system and deals with cancer cells and other types of diseases and disorders in your body. There are some big differences in a horse's lymph node system and a human's lymph node system. And one of those goes back to evolution. Horses were designed to be moving constantly, and so their lymphatic system operates best when your horse is
moving.
Exactly. So standing around in a horse's stall does have an impact on their lymphatic system. They also have a lot more lymph nodes in their body than humans do, but this could also just be because they're a lot bigger. Dr. Ramey in his document did find that there were some benefits to dogs that were receiving massages for lymphatic drainage, but it didn't seem to be transferable to horses in his mind. I'm gonna kind of say that this lymphatic drainage possibility is a question mark. I don't want to dig too much into the lymphatic system and its drainage right now. I think we could be here all day. It's a big rabbit hole, but it is really interesting and it is a question mark. I'd say these boots have a slim chance of helping with lymphatic drainage. I did find a 2006 article that was published in Germany, so I couldn't read much of it because it's all in Dutch, that did find that cotton wool bandages, sort of your traditional stable bandages, had a big impact on the horse's lymphatic system and its ability to move fluid. Basically, what they did was hooked the horse up to a contrast fluid and like injected that constantly into their leg and then x-rayed their leg with cotton stable wraps and then with those elastic bandages, those like socks for horses, or I think there's like silver whinnies or whatever. And they found that the elastic socks did a good job of maintaining lymphatic movement throughout the horse's body compared to the cotton wraps, the traditional standing wrap that you would do for your horse, that actually did interfere with the horse's ability to move their lymphatic system around, their lymph around their body, and reduce and caused swelling. So I don't know if this boots are going to help with that. I don't know if they're going to hinder with that. I don't know that it's worth it when we know there's probably better products on the market.
Yeah, it's weird because it seems like everything the boots are trying to do, there's a product on the market already that does it better, and they don't do any of the one things that they're claiming well enough to validate them.
Absolutely. And I think that's why there's not research. Why it's not published.
Yeah, because it's not enough to weigh the scale in their favor.
Right. I think they know that. And I think they're selling a product their customers want, in all honesty.
And they're selling it easily.
They're selling it easily. They're selling it easily and the customers want it and the customers are buying it. You know, why not? That's what I mentioned in her original design that had a more pressurized massage and the wine chilling unit in it. May have been more beneficial.
But more beneficial for what?
For tendons.
Because in the massaging portion?
The one thing massage can do is help damaged tendons.
Okay.
But there's a huge caveat.
Yeah.
So tendons, there has been research, a couple rat studies actually, that looked at...
Little rat tendons,
giving the rats little tendonitis. No, don't even laugh. Do not even laugh because rat studies are brutal. I downloaded it and I read it and you know what they refer to the rat? They say they sacrificed and harvested the rat.
They're awful to rats. I know they're awful to rats, but I'm so sorry. Just the imagery of a little rat tendon is adorable. Like, imagine him wearing like little wolf boots too to protect his little rat tendons.
He's got little ice bay booties.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's adorable. But anyways, so the rat study. So real quick on the rat studies, they did find, and I've actually seen this method used in other case studies for horses, is that there is a method of soft tissue massage that does seem to increase the amount of fibroblasts that are going to that tendon. So a fibroblast is the cell that is what like connective tissue in animals is made out of. And it is exactly what you want to see. It has a lot of collagen and stuff in it and is what you want to see when you're repairing a tendon or a ligament. So that's what you're trying to bring to this area. But in order to do that, it's a very sort of specific type of massage. It's called cross fiber friction massage. So to do cross fiber friction massage, what you're doing is you are applying a lot of pressure, not enough to break the skin, but a lot of pressure, and then rubbing back and forth in that area. You can either use your finger or a tool to do it. And that method has been proven in rats and maybe even in horses to increase fibroblasts and to increase the healing ability of that tendon. But it's a very specific type of massage that sounds really painful. And I don't like the boots vibration is not doing that specific tendon massage at all. I don't think it's something like a mechanical massage unit can do. You're going to need your hand or like a specific tool, which like to get in there and rub it and do it. And so in the rat studies, they had like a specific tool because they couldn't use their finger because their fingers were bigger than a rat. And so they couldn't use it.
Those poor rats are probably getting like the most painful tendon massage of their lives. Oh my God.
They did sedate them. They did have to sedate the rats for the tendon massage. That is the research around these boots. I mean, the biggest complaint I found for people about these boots was that they didn't stay cold long enough. But everyone else loved these boots. There is review after review after review saying that these are, you know, These are fantastic that they've made such a difference in their horse. There is so many bloggers who have bought these boots and say, you know, your tack trunk isn't complete without them. You know, how did I ever live without these boots? You know, they're perfect.
What kind of different changes were they seeing that made the boots so incredible? And are they changes that are simple enough to see through a placebo effect?
I think, honestly, the more we sort of start to understand soft tissue injuries, you wonder how much of those, like, it reduced swelling in my horse's leg in a week.
Oh, just occurred over time.
Right. Did that just occur over time? Like, that seems like, is there truly a connection? But I think the thing is, it's horsewear. Horsewear is known for quality products. They're known for thoughtful designs. They put a lot of, like, effort into what they're packaging and selling. That as a blogger, as a purchaser, as whoever, I can imagine opening up these boots and seeing a beautiful, well-designed boot that's made out of quality material and really not questioning anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And just going from there, because what, unless you're going to dig into the research and figure out, okay, can these boots cool? Does the vibration do anything? Like, you know, the tendons aren't going to get the same circulation and blood increase, right? Like, they don't work the same as muscles. And no one's researching if tendon massage, just tendon vibration, is increasing circulation. But I'd find it if it doesn't increase in muscles, it probably doesn't increase in tendons.
Well, I think it's really curious that they had to go about patenting it underneath just the vibrations, right? And that's fair enough. That's how patents work in the horse world or any world of selling a product.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel as though at some point you would at least put research behind that one part that you patented.
Yeah, and I do find that really weird that horsewear doesn't have anything. And we know in 2013 they were doing research.
Yeah, that's weird that the research isn't available. That's really weird.
Not only is it not available, but how many websites say clinically proven, research backed? They don't even make any of those claims. And I think that's for a reason.
Yeah. And I think that's really telling.
Yeah.
In a good way, though, because they're not making outlandish claims necessarily, but...
No, absolutely not. I mean, and when I first looked at their website and read through what they were saying about this boot, I was like, oh, this isn't even crazy. Like, all of this stuff sounds totally possible. I was on board at first. Like, I started with their website and was like, this all makes perfect sense, right? It doesn't sound insane. It sounds plausible. But then you start digging into the research, and none of it holds any water.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't spend $300 on these boots. If you want something for icing your horse's legs, get actual ice boots, something that has a good structure to them that you can easily fill with water and ice repeatedly. Avoid any ice pack boot altogether.
Right, when you say ice boots, it's the boots you fill with ice.
Correct. Unfortunately, there's not like a better name for them, but only thing I could say is like wet method. You have to use a wet method, which includes ice and water directly on your horse's skin for that heat transfer to work and last. Anything that's an ice pack boot where you freeze the boot or it comes with a gel pack does not work. It will not get your horse's legs cold enough. Yeah, and then if you're looking at increasing circulation, I would really look at those socks or the Silver Winnies, something that has seen at least a little bit of support for them. I haven't researched those fully, so I don't know how well they actually work. But as far as like if you're worried about your horse's lymphatic system, that's a place to look. But otherwise, if you have $300 and you really like the font, then go for it. Like, that's all you're buying. Be comfortable knowing you're buying the font that says Ice Vibe down. Like, that's it, the label. And I think that's the other reason they're really popular is they are 100% a status symbol. Like, you have $300 to waste on a pair of boots that don't work.
Yeah, that's a power move, all right.
So one other final fun fact before we wrap this episode totally. Louisa Williams, who invented the Ice Vibe boots, still works for horsewear. She was still working there in 2021, which I think is really cool of horsewear. Like, they didn't just hire her for the boots. And she is still a designer, product designer at horsewear. And I found an article from 2021 where they explain how Hoggle Zoo in Utah they coordinated with Louisa at Horsewear to design a special fly mask for one of their critters. Their critter Princess was suffering.
Oh, the rhinoceros.
Yeah, the rhinoceros, which I think that was Louisa. She helped design that fly mask.
That's adorable. That's adorable. Well done.
I also think it's hilarious that the fly mask is under their rhino line.
That is also adorable. Well played on all fronts.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Horsewear is a great company. I think they had good intentions with these boots. They just don't They don't work.
Yeah. Well, that's therapy products for you.
I mean, it makes you question all therapy products now that I am super questioning, can you improve circulation? Like, I mean, if there's damage, you can improve it, but you have to know there's damage. Then you have to target the damage. And do you do that through medicine or food? Like, or do you have to have like a laser? What about lasers? Can they do anything?
Wait. What about sharks with freaking laser beams?
That is a very good therapy tool. I would definitely encourage investment in sharks with freaking laser beams in order to improve your horse's circulation. That will actually improve it, not just with the lasers, but also I feel like there'd be a lot of exercise going on.
Yeah. Which, with the exercise induced by the sharks, you're going to want some flare strips.
For sure. Yep, flare strip it up.
Well, hopefully you guys got something out of that, right? At least we found one product for once that we can get behind. The flare strips.
That is exciting.
I'm so pleasantly surprised.
I'm pleasantly surprised as well.
On that note, thank you guys so much for listening. If you have comments, questions, concerns, don't hesitate to reach out to us on Instagram at inthebarn.pod, or you can send us an email at inthebarnpod@gmail.com. Stay safe, stay classy, and stay in the saddle.
Bye.
Hey, you didn't do it, Anne.
I know. Okay, hold on. Let me try. Let me try one more time. I need an and.
Stay safe, stay classy, and stay in the saddle.
And watch out for rhinos with fly masks, because they have fly and eye issues too.